Today to have in our studio three representatives from Project Hope. Project Hope in this area is just slightly short of a year old, and it is a response to a horrendous hurricane that we had last year. Actually, it was two storms, August 28th of 2011, and Storm Lee came a few days later. And they pretty much devastated the countryside around here, washed away whole homes. Families lost their homes that they lived in for years, destroyed businesses, ruined roads and bridges. And we're in this local area still recovering from the after effects and will be for years. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves and say a little bit about what their involvement has been with Project Hope. Go ahead, Phil.
Hi, my name is Phil Jackson, and I'm one of the team leaders for Project Hope. I've been with Project Hope since it started in October of last year.
Okay.
Lynn Byrne. I've been working with members of Project Hope since January of 2012 as a crisis counselor.
And I'm Barbara Sturman, and I'm also the other team leader of Project Hope, and I've been with the team since its onset in October.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what's happened since Project Hope began.
A lot has happened since Project Hope began.
Okay.
When we first went out into the field after our initial training, this team was able to really hit the ground running because one of the pieces of Project Hope, one of the more important pieces, is that the people who are doing the crisis counseling are people from the area. The vast majority of our team are mountaintop residents who in some way, shape, or form were either directly impacted by the storm or that they were working already in the relief effort. So we had the opportunity to really know what areas to target. We already had a substantial list of people that we knew would benefit from some emotional supports and resource linkage, which is part of, you know, what Project Hope does, you know, initially. So this team got off and running. And it was, you know, we've seen many, many, many people, you know, having done individual crisis counseling sessions with numerous people in the area over that time.
Okay. You mentioned you received training. What kind of training did you get?
We received training through the New York State Office of Mental Health in how to, you know, basically how to be a crisis counselor. Crisis counseling in the aftermath of a storm is kind of a unique thing because, one, we're not psychologists. We're not trained professionals in the mental health field. The majority of the people on the team were retired school teachers from the area, but that's the way the model works. It's we go in and we do crisis counseling and resource linkage with people, and we were trained in basically how to do that. It's not a long-term approach. We try to link people up if people need additional assistance, link them to the long-term resources that are in the area, the professionals that are in the area. Basically, we would go in and listen to people, and while we were listening, we would do an assessment, an assessment of basic needs. You know, I need windows, I need a roof, and then through monitoring people and having a conversation and really doing some, this team was excellent at active listening and being able to translate what they were hearing into what the needs of the people were and then linking them with the potential resources that could meet those needs. And giving the people the numbers to call, and that's a big part of it. We're not doing case management per se. We were assisting people in being more resilient and offering them the resources for them to, you know, make the calls. Okay. And sometimes we would sit there while they made the calls, you know, just to, you know, offer them assistance in navigating the red tape. And initially, a lot of our field work was getting people who had not signed up with FEMA to sign up with FEMA. I mean, we had a tremendous push when they extended the deadlines to get people in, because a lot of people felt, my loss is not that great. Other people need the money more. It was really, people were being very, very altruistic, but also not understanding that their loss was their loss, and they could, you know, it was important for them to get a number to file with FEMA if they ever wanted to reopen a case or open a case with them.
Okay. So it was recruitment, in a sense, to get people to understand what FEMA was and why they might need it.
Well, it wasn't just FEMA.
Aside
from you, when you talked about educating and, you know, getting trained, we really actually had to educate ourselves, because part of what Phil had talked about was resource linkage. We had to really take a look at what were the resources, what did they provide, what were the agencies, where was the funding, who had grants, who had loans, who was eligible, who was not eligible, and we really had to educate our team and ourselves about what could we say to people. It wasn't just FEMA. It might be Community Action. It might be Catholic Charities. It might be, and we had to find out what was being provided by each of those agencies. So it took some, you know.
So you had to do that research on your own.
We did, and you know, some of the things that we found out is that, you know, in this county, in Greene County, there has been a disconnect between the agencies in the, what they call, flatland, you know, in Catskill, as opposed to those people who need the resources up in the mountaintop. So for us, a big part of what we were doing is not only learning what the agencies could provide, it was getting those connections so that the people on the mountaintop could understand or take advantage or find out or make readily available everything that was being provided for them.
And at this point in time, has that effort been pretty successful?
That part of our effort has been very successful. And out of that, right now there's a long-term recovery group that's starting to be established, where all these agencies now will meet on a monthly basis, maybe even more often, but probably on a monthly basis, to really keep looking at what are the long-term needs of people, the unmet needs of people, still who are out there who haven't gotten everything they need to recover.
You mentioned support groups, and that's a big part of what you do, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. We had two phases to our program. In the first phase, we were literally out there knocking on doors. It's all supposed to be very confidential, so that we really weren't given names. Very often we would just find out, or we'd drive up and down roads and just look to see who looks like they need help, and we'd knock on a door and find out whether or not or what people really needed. So that was the first phase. Then once we got a sense of and started communicating and finding out who our clientele actually were, then we could start in our second phase, which was a phase of building resilience. So that's when we started our support groups. We had a support group in Lexington, a support group in Prattsville, and Lynn has been very involved with the support group in Prattsville.
Has your group, Lynn, been well attended?
Yes, in the winter time, we had maybe 6-7 people coming every week, and but as the summer came along, the numbers dwindled, which prompted us to move ahead into the third stage and final stage of Project Hope. That was from after speaking with people, we were able to get an idea of what people wanted to see in their communities. And being able to work with those people to foster some of those ideas that they had. And a farmer's market has been started in Lexington, for an example of an outcome of that. There are wellness days, free wellness days, that are going to be offered in Ashland. Quality of life. There is also, for the first time, going to be a Department for the Aging Senior Forum at Hunter Mountain, where seniors will be able to meet with practitioners and different organizations to help satisfy their needs. We've also gone to several summer camps this summer and worked with children. And
it sounds to me like some awfully good things have come out of this tragedy in terms of community involvement and awareness and just people knowing each other better through suffering the same things.
Well, we had the unique opportunity, this team had the unique opportunity to do actual outreach field work. There was no other agencies, to my knowledge, in the county had an actual team of people in the field assessing people's needs. And through doing those assessments, we could also build, like Lynn was saying, build on, well, what is the community looking for? You know, these were projects out of the outreach of our groups, people saying, well, you know, it'd be really nice if we had something like this, or I could see something like this. You know, it was the positive portion of the group after people got done telling their stories and, mm-hmm. you know, experience, you know, getting over the trauma and looking at rebuilding and saying, we would like to see this in our community. And one of the project that Barbara was fundamental in really establishing and making the networking connections was out of one group. We kept hearing that people were bringing in pictures and saying, you know, I got my house back, and this is my new house, and it's great. He said, but these are the pictures of my gardens. You know, people who had lived in houses for 30 and 40 years had these established gardens that were absolutely breathtaking. You know, I guess any gardener who's listening would know how much it takes to put a garden in and nurture it over all of those years. And then showing us pictures of, you know, just everything, a house sitting on a piece of land. And Barbara, you want to talk about the connections that you made?
Well, and Lynn also, the first part of the, we did garden days, and we set that up with the Cornell Cooperative, and I must say that it was the master gardeners, and mm-hmm. particularly Bonnie Bladen, who really took the ball and got their master gardeners and helped donations of flowers and perennials and annuals and vegetables. And mm-hmm. So in both Prattsville, Lexington, and in Windham, we had garden days where the master gardeners were available. They could talk to people about testing their soil. They were given free plants. They were given tools. And my friend here did the second half of it, and that was a valiant effort, the volunteer day. So then there was a planting day. Mm-hmm. So, Lynn, you know more about that. That was incredible.
Yeah, volunteers signed up to actually help people plan and plant their gardens. It was a very moving experience for everyone to have some beauty mm-hmm. back on their property.
So it was a therapeutic thing far beyond the yes. beauty aspect.
And it's given people back a little bit more pride in their towns, you know, and, well, who's going to take care of the planters next year? And what should we plant next year? And,
I was wondering about what was the emotional response over time? Were people in shock, or was it some sort of post-traumatic stress syndrome at first?
Well, that's interesting. That's how this whole project started. It started after 9/11, and it started as Project Liberty when they realized that many of the first responders were not seeking the kind of support they needed, and they were all suffering from
post-traumatic
stress disorder. Yeah. Yeah. And they started training crisis counselors to guide them to the kind of resources that they would need. And that was very successful. So then when Katrina hit, they continued Project Liberty mm-hmm. in New Orleans. And now, since the whole state, how many counties?
There were 39 counties.
39 counties in this whole state, all the way from Plattsburgh to mm-hmm. Long Island to Montauk. So since there were so many counties, they reenacted Project Hope with the idea in mind of, you know, get these resources to people before. And one of the things in our training is we look at that there's actually kind of the hills and valleys of what you go through. So in the beginning, there's all this heroic, I can get out there, I'm going to be out there with my neighbor, I'm going to get the job done, we're going to fight this, we're going to overcome. And that's great, and everybody is out there, and everybody is kind of, you know, euphoric. But then once they, you know, FEMA leaves, you know, their deadlines are done, they didn't get all the money. So then there's this kind of slump of depression where they realize the reality of, you know what, I'm not going to, there's still mold growing. Oh, my God. You know, I don't have enough.
And that's when you guys stepped in October about
that?
Well,
actually, that was, we stepped in still in the euphoric stage. But we've been kind of riding the crest. And then every time, you know, and then there are these hills and valleys, every time there's a rainstorm.
Yes.
Every time you mention on the radio, you know, flood warnings, every time people hear thunder
breaking, they still react.
They react, you know, and people have, you know, or, you know, people have suppressed it and they're fine. And some people are now just surfacing again. And then, of course, with the, you know, the advent of the anniversary, people are starting to re-experience the same.
Is that typical that an anniversary would cause the reemergence?
Yes, it is typical. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
So are you guys doing extra for the next 2 weeks or something?
Yes, they actually just put together another brochure for us to give out to people, you know, so people could become conscious of the fact that, you know, that they're still in process, there's still great grief going on, there's still feelings of loss, they are going to have these moments, these trigger moments. It's important for them to create closure, to seek assistance, not to hold back. In fact, we, ironically enough, we just started another support group today in Ashland, and we had about 8 people there. It was really great. And this particular support group is for caregivers, people who had either an ailing parent or somebody with dementia or maybe somebody who's, you know, like a very severe disability, and they, not only did they have to weather the storm, so to speak, they had to take care of somebody in the process, and they've never had time to process for themselves. And there were people sitting there today saying to me, well, you know, I didn't really think I should ask for help, but, and this is like an 85-year-old woman saying, I lost my vacuum cleaner in the flood, and I've been bending down, sweeping up. And I said, do you need a vacuum cleaner? You mean to tell me you're just telling us now? Of course. We'll get you. So out there, if anybody has a vacuum cleaner, we need a vacuum cleaner.
And you can call Project Hope all these numbers here. What's your number there that they would call if they have a vacuum cleaner?
It's 518-285-4663.
So if you have a vacuum cleaner to donate to Project Hope, there's the number, and we'll give it again.
But it's just an example of how people are so, you know, they're, some of these concerns are still surfacing.
I'm looking at your newest brochure here, and it says, if you feel your reactions to the flooding are lasting too long or are getting worse instead of better, call Project Hope. Now, it's easy to envision that happening, but that sounds like it would give a referral to a mental health professional, perhaps. You do that, too,
do
you?
Well, that's the whole idea behind Project Hope. The whole idea is to support people in finding the resources they need. And if the resource is a mental health practitioner, that's the resource. If the resource is a car, a new car, or transportation, that's the direction. Now, there gets to a certain point, though, where now we're turning over many of our clients to the case managers. Mm. So the case managers is now another level of support that's provided by FEMA, and they will presumably stay with the person for 2 years to make sure that they really do get all of the resources they need. Our job is just to turn them over to whatever the agency, mm-hmm. whoever is most appropriate.
And I think it's important to realize that most people will recover fully, and right now a big part of our push, because we will be out of the field in probably another 2 months, is to make sure that we go back to the people who we've seen before and really do an honest assessment with them and get them to understand that they really, maybe they're a little stuck, maybe they need, you know, some longer term care, and try to guide them in that direction. But most people are really remarkably resilient, and while everyone experienced the trauma, not everyone responds or recovers in the same way. And there will be a small percentage of people who will need ongoing supports for an extended period of time, and really that's what we're really trying to focus on as we kind of kind of back out a little bit, making sure that they understand what's out there, what supports are out there, and really encourage them to make use of those supports.
Okay, yeah. Well, a couple things occur to me. I have personal friends who had devastating losses in these three in particular, all lost their living places. And so I'm wondering if you might, without using names, speak about some of those cases you've encountered. I also play in a Civil War band up there, and we did some concerts in October in Prattsville and Windham. And it brought tears to my eyes, and I didn't lose anything in the flood, but it was just, I guess it was a feeling of empathy that got generated by what was going on there. And so can you speak about any specific cases that impressed you without using names? So,
Yeah, we can speak about people who we've seen out in the field and you know, and what their experiences were, and I'll allow these guys to do it. I tell a story of, you know, part of what we do is allowing people to what I call have aha moments, mm-hmm. where it really dawns on them. You know, 9 times out of 10 people will say, "I'm fine," and so, well, tell the story. What were you doing that day? Where, you know, what was going on? And you know, and once people start to tell their story, it becomes apparent to them, you know, they're allowed to think about what was actually going through their mind at the time they were, you know, responding. And one woman who was carrying her child to a fire truck through chest-deep water said that, you know, I just dawned on me that I realized that if I dropped my son or if I stumbled, we both would have died that day. Mm-hmm. And here were people 15 minutes prior to that having a perfectly normal Sunday morning. This woman was making her son breakfast, and the water, part of the trauma that people experienced, and I think that I experienced in talking to people, was that the water came so fast. You know, one gentleman was having breakfast, he opened his basement door, there was a little bit of water pooling on his floor, and he went and had his cereal and toast and opened the door, and the water was right up to his bottom step. And by the time he got his wife out of the house, carried her to the truck, the water was waist deep. So the span of time was so compressed that people didn't have the opportunity to really think about what they were experiencing. And a big part of what we do and continue to do is allowing people to, you know, step back from the experience and really think about the emotions that they were experiencing and how terrifying and how really traumatic it, you know, it was a traumatic event, losing your home. But, you know, there are many, many stories. You know, I can only imagine, you know, the team has, you know, probably hundreds of stories at this point in time of people who, you know, really struggled for their lives, you know, in a very brief period of time, you know, going from normalcy to absolute terror and fighting for your life. I mean, that is a traumatic event that most people don't really experience in their lifetime.
Hmm. Yeah, we heard, particularly in Prattsville, when it came on, the onslaught of the water came on so quickly. And, of course, there's three creeks that were converging, bringing down bridges and all cars and septic tanks, all converging on Prattsville, where the dam is, and all the, and not only the water but the debris. And people were talking in how it was so shocking that people would open their doors, stand in the middle of all the water rushing at them, while others are screaming, "Get out, get out!" They were just dumbfounded. They couldn't believe the shock of what was happening. So it was trying to get people even mobilized at first, because they were not conscious of what to do.
People reacted differently, and some just sort of froze.
And some were stuck on top of their roofs. There's many stories of people sitting, you know, for hours, over 10 hours on top of their roofs. Even fire trucks couldn't get at them until they could finally get them down. Another gentleman, another gentleman was telling me that he was in his trailer and the water kept coming up and coming up and coming up. And then finally, a truck that gets logs, a logging truck, he was able to step, the wheels were so high, they were able to get him onto the wheels of the truck and get him out.
Mm. And to the listeners, is something that I've been thinking about recently, is as they hear us speak, they're hearing us describe. Right. But to actually be there and have, and the senses are overwhelmed, you're seeing this water, the volume of Niagara Falls coming down Main Street, the smell of mud and hearing rocks and boulders just smashing against everything. And it's it was truly a sensory overload. And it was tough.
You would probably say a life-changing experience for those who went through it.
Yes, yes. And many times for the better of lives, because people have come together. People have learned so much from other people. And the elderly in our communities have become much more important because we've learned so much from their resiliency. And there has, of course, been wonderful things that have begun.
Particularly the Wellness Day, we'd like to encourage. This will be this Thursday evening from 5 to 9?
7.
5 to 7 at the Ashland Community Center, or the Ashland Community Center, and they'll be
there'll be
practitioners there, massage and Reiki, and so if anyone would like to come in Greene County, who you don't have to have been impacted by the storm, but certainly if you have and you want a nice little shoulder rub, please call Peggy. Do we have her number?
Yeah, it's on his.
I've got it here. 265-5607. Peggy Rapier?
Yes.
Now,
And that's again, that's Thursday night, August 23rd at the Ashland Town Hall.
Great.
Hope will be there if anyone would like to speak to someone there, and case managers.
Okay. I'd like to get perhaps your comments on something Phil said earlier, that mostly teachers were involved with this effort. What do you make of that? No comment.
No, it was wonderful. I mean, this team has been they've been remarkable. We've all learned and grown from this experience. And, you know, one of the really interesting things was watching how people really did grow and into their roles as crisis counselors, and realizing that they already were an integral part of the community. They already had a very deep understanding of the community. They knew how to talk to people. They knew how to manage situations. All of those things, they drew on from their background. The public speaking piece of it. I mean, we have met with town boards in pretty much all of the towns in the affected areas several times, and doing presentations and explaining what Project Hope is about. You know, initially I think people were very reluctant, as everyone is, to do public speaking, but when they drew back and said, well, I've stood in front of a classroom of 30 some odd kids for 30 some odd years, I can do this. I think teachers are remarkable, remarkable people, and I don't think they nearly give themselves enough credit for all the skills they developed over the course of all of their years, and plus their community connections. These guys really knew so many people already in the community and had a very strong community attachment. And not only that, they had very strong credibility in the community, which I think was really vital. In allowing people to open their doors to us and understand that we were there to help. And So that was my experience with it. It was great.
You said before that, or hinted that there was kind of a problem in communication between the valley and the mountaintop, or not as much. Has that improved? Or?
Well, I don't know that it's a problem in communication. Is, you know, one of the things that I took with me out of this was someone said to me, people will get services where the services are. And by and large, you know, most of the services are based in the lowlands, as people put it, or and so people in those areas were more adept at getting services, more familiar with getting services, while people on the mountaintop, I don't think, had the familiarity with what was available. And we did find, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, that once we brought it to the attention of people, and we met with every service organization in the county, both governmental and private, and even some in Columbia County. The Healthcare Consortium comes to mind, where they were saying, yes, we're more than willing to come up. Give us a forum. People came to educate us on what programs they had available to us. They were very, very willing to come up to the mountaintop. It was just a matter of, and I think that was one of the wonderful, wonderful things that Project Hope did, was it was just a matter of getting the door open. And I think that these guys, because of their community connections and their involvement in the community, were able to do that.
Does that mean that perhaps like satellite offices or something that are, or maybe a long-term solution that for that kind of problem?
Well, actually there's a strong initiative that we're supporting, and also statewide, is the 211, and the communication of the idea that 211 should be as readily available as 911. 911 is emergency. 211 is when you personally need any kind of domestic help, any kind of emotional help, any kind of resource that's not emergency related. And what we're doing now, as we go back and we revisit many of the people that we saw initially, we're encouraging them to use the 211 connection.
And that's, location doesn't matter so much because that's anywhere.
Exactly right. And what now 211 is a call center, their callers are trained as crisis counselors. So their callers have a list of every resource in Greene County, where it is, what they provide, who's eligible and who's not. Very much like what we were doing initially. So that when people call 211 and they explain what they need, the crisis counselor on the other end can really direct them to what they need.
So this will be an ongoing thing,
211. This is ongoing, right.
Okay. There are some, I guess I would call them celebratory events going on this weekend up on the mountain. One is Mudfest in Prattsville. There are a couple others in Windham. Does Project Hope have anything to do with that? You do?
Well, we do. We're in the town of Lexington. We're going to have a table for children. We were at the Greene County fair, and we had a table set up with games that helped children learn how to set up emergency kits.
Oh.
So we have worked that, being teachers, into a fun event, and we'll be doing that in Lexington, helping out on Saturday in Lexington from 11 to 2. And Prattsville.
And we're supporting there's going to be a blessing of the water.
I saw that.
In Prattsville on Saturday evening, 4 to 6. And we're supporting that event.
Is that kind of festival, is that a way to, on the year anniversary, is that going to be helpful emotionally for the community too?
I believe Margot Mullen is putting that together, and I believe that that's the intention of that, you know, to do that.
And there'll be a play up there, too.
The play, actually, they're going to postpone.
Oh, okay.
But there'll be, like, probably some readings.
Margot Mullen is Soup to Nuts Theater.
That's right.
And so she's been working with, is it children or
mostly
adults?
Both, actually.
Mm-hmm. To come up with a play. I don't know what it's about, but I imagine it must have something to do with the storm and the recovery. And at some point, that'll be put on, so. I think their hope was to do it this weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
And everybody wasn't clear. Mudfest is this Saturday, all day in Prattsville. Sunday.
The kickoff will be the blessing.
And then, that will be on Saturday.
And then I believe there's fireworks Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then all day Sunday.
But I...
And then you guys have some other events, too, that we haven't mentioned, I think, right?
Some of them I mentioned, yeah, but other things that are coming up.
What else do you want to mention?
We have Thursday night is the first wellness day.
That's right.
And that's in Ashland.
Friday is Farmer's Market.
And that's in Lexington.
Yes. Saturday will be in Lexington for a while and then moving on to Prattsville. Sunday is, of course, the Mud Fest. And there are some of our crisis counselors are also going to be in Wyndham on Saturday and Sunday. We have the Senior Day coming up and Quality of Life Forum. And also, we are available if there are any groups that would like presentations. We have done many presentations and would love to offer community clubs opportunity.
You're talking about clubs like Rotary and...
And there's a list, I believe, on there of different topics.
The kind of presentations that you do, yes.
Yes.
Anniversary reactions, problem-solving, crisis and support counseling, and community and individual networking.
Yeah.
And the other two events you mentioned, too, are the Mountaintop Senior Day is September 12th at Hunter Mountain, and that's sponsored with the Greene County Department of Aging. And then the Quality of Life Forum is sponsored by the Wyndham Chamber of Commerce and the Wyndham Rotary Club, and that's October 20th from 9 to 3 at the VFW Hall in Wyndham.
Well, and also I just want to mention that September is Preparedness Month. So we are encouraging, and probably we're going to be putting together programs to do in the schools to help children put together their own preparedness kits.
Okay.
And families.
And families. Very important.
What will it be like for you when the field work stops? Will it be traumatic?
We don't talk about that.
Is there any provision made, any expression that
What counselors do you go to?
The State Office of Mental Health, who is our overseer in some regard, they were the one who initially put in for the grant. And I really do want to mention that the Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene Counties was approached in order to manage this grant. You need an entity within the county to manage the field team, doing the nuts and bolts, the you know, fiscal supports, the payroll, and all of those things. And the Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene County stepped up to do that. And they don't get any funding for that or anything like that. They took it on as, you know, and seeing the importance of it and the good work it could do in the communities. And I just wanted to make sure that to mention that. There will be a meeting and a training on, yet another training on how to kind of demobilize. And it was something that we just have begun to broach that subject at our meetings. And it's going to be... it's going to be very difficult. I mean, people have been just deeply, deeply involved in the communities, and we talk about that. It becomes really difficult even to catalog how much we've done and how many people, you know, we've seen and spoken to, and to keep all of those things straight in your head. And I don't think people have really registered the emotional impact and the emotional output that they've put into the program. And I guess that's another good reason for having school teachers, because they're tireless, altruistic people who only think of others and not themselves.
I'm going to let you go on like that because I agree.
One of the things that also with this training, the last training and the one to come, is they're encouraging each of us to create a legacy. So something that for us personally is ongoing or that we leave into the community. So for instance, the support group that started today for caregivers is started by a woman who really actually wants to see this continue. And it's something that she really wants to promote, not only for caregivers, but for those suffering, those who are taking care of people with Alzheimer's and other things. So that's her legacy. And I know... Lynn, I think, wants to be involved with the long-term recovery group as an ongoing, so that would be her legacy and, you know, things of that sort. And the wellness day is going to be something that continues, so another two members of our team are going to take that on. So they do have things that they are looking to continue.
And those things you just mentioned, I wouldn't be surprised if they are eligible for some kind of grant in continuing. Or well, at least under the Department of Mental Health, they fit that.
Well, the Wellness Day is being supported right now by the Columbia Green Mental Health and by the Rotary. Okay. So there are entities that do want to see this continue into the future.
Very good.
It's really amazing to see, you know, at least from my observation and perspective, you know, how something grassroots really does begin. And when Barbara talks about, you know, the team's legacy, people on the team have been developing, seeing a need and developing their own expertise in the area so they can assist the community. You know, several members of our group have gone through NAMI training. Several members of our group, you know, one member of our group is a member of the Alzheimer's Association at this point in time.
4-H.
You know, there was no 4-H in certain areas, and one of our members said, you know, in talking to people, I think this would be a really valued project for the community. So as an aside to what they were doing for Project Hope, they have their own personal community involvement, and that's been a wonderful thing about this team, that they, you know, were already involved in the community, and they only found additional ways to, you know, start grassroots things, such as, and like the Wellness Day will continue on. And I think that the connection with Cornell Cooperative Extension and the Mountaintop will continue on. I don't see any reason why there wouldn't be another gardening day next year. And while we won't be in the field then, it's something that, you know, because we opened the doors and people were willing to walk through those doors, that they will continue. And now one of the important things that we tried to do was to make the connection with the people in the community to the agency. Mm-hmm. And then we step out, because that person will be in the community and the agency will be there, while we won't always be there to be, you know, we'll be the short-lived middleman. But once those connections are made, people can use those connections over and over and over again.
Well, there's a real good message for clubs and organizations out there who would like to support something good that's going on. I have old cars, so I think of car clubs are now contributing to charities, which is an excellent thing. I can think of a couple who might be wanting to be involved in something like the Project Hope. So, or it's whatever its evolution is, yeah. So that's a message out there. If you, our listeners, are listening and you're in one of the clubs, be it Kiwanis, Rotary, or a car club, here is an active place to donate to.
Well, the active place to donate to, not to Project Hope, because we will be, we're short-lived right now. It's probably our end date is sometime in early, mid-November. However, the long-term recovery group is looking to create a 501. They are looking to become an entity that will look at unmet needs throughout the county, bring agencies together. So look for information regarding that long-term recovery group. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and that may be, some people that you might want to have on to, because they will, like their name says, they will be, you know, the long-term recovery group, and that hopefully will eventually morph into any kind of disaster relief. It won't be directly related to Irene. It will be a group that stays in the community to deal with any future disasters, you know, large or small. And it just, you know, no, we don't fundraise. We don't do any kind of fundraising in the field. So. And which has been great. It's always nice to be able to field a team of people and never have to not have to fundraise.
Worry about money, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, really appreciate your talking about this. Have we missed anything? Anything else you'd like to say before we conclude?
Oh, I'm just grateful to have had the opportunity to be out in the field and to work with such an extraordinary group of people. You know, and just to say that we've provided primary services to close to 5,000 people at this point in time in Greene County, and that's a face-to-face interaction with, you know, not necessarily an individual crisis counseling session, but a group or an informative session or something of that nature. So that, it's a huge chunk of people that a team of six people has managed to contact, you know, in the span of 9 or 10 months.
And people this time, it's good to realize and be open to the idea that even though maybe your home wasn't destroyed by Irene, if you knew people, if your neighbor was affected, many people are going through the same feelings as people whose lives were destroyed, in a sense. And people need to be kind to themselves if they find themselves being a little bit short and curt to their family members, which is happening a lot. It's an anniversary response. Mm. So be kind to each other and yourself, and get out this weekend and have a good time.
Okay. Yeah, and I just want to add that it really has been an amazingly wonderful learning experience for all of us, and most of the reactions that we have gotten has been so positive. People have been amazing. They've been so appreciative. We feel blessed in terms of the opportunity we have had to make the connections with so many of the people who have really suffered and lost so much, but have been just angels in the process.
Well, a big word of thank you to all the individuals that have been involved with Project Hope. And if you're one of the people out there who's benefited, tell them thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we will be back